The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
And we're back with hour two of Sports Talk 1240. Gary, John, and John here on this Sunday night, March 25th, 2018, reporting from the studios at WGBB 1240 AM in Merrick, New York. Randy Gorman from FD Consulting will be on the air in a couple of minutes. He will be calling in from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, talking about the NHL draft. And let's just go continue what we were talking about off air, John. Just going in a little bit more on weight. There is obviously the situation where he's on already? Okay. All right. We'll get to it in the second half. So we'll bring in our guest. He's been on our show before. He is a draft expert or a scouting expert. He's based out of British Columbia, Canada. His name is Randy Gorman. He's joining us on Sports Talk 1240 tonight in New York. Randy, John, Gary, John, and John here. Welcome again to the show, and good evening, and thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
All right. So, again, for those people who don't know about you, just how about we just give us like a little 60-second quick synopsis of all the work you do and in your scouting role?
Well, I see about anywhere between 150 to 200 games a year, predominantly in Western Canada. But I know I have worked for various scouting organizations over the years. This year, I'm basically a consultant to Future Consideration Scouting. That's due to I may be doing something along your lines in the future in September, and that way I had to bow out so I wouldn't be showing any favoritism in the future to any particular organization. So,
no, Randy, you can't have my job.
No, they want to give me my own show up in Canada here in Vancouver, but, I mean, I'm not going to talk about that tonight. I just want to talk prospects with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll definitely give you kudos and credit, because when you were on our show 2 years ago, we were extolling the virtues of some guy that's on our team right now in Long Island wearing number 13 and, from your area and doing quite nicely, if I might add.
Matthew Barzal.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, what can I say about Matthew? I mean, he's from the Lower Mainland. That's what we like to call basically the suburbs of Vancouver here. And, it's funny about Matthew, because at one time he didn't know if he wanted to play major junior hockey. He didn't know if he wanted to play at that level anyway, because of the schedule, the way it is. He played almost like a pro schedule at 72 games. He thought maybe he might want to play NCAA. And, it was a very hard thing for the general manager of the Seattle T-Birds, Thunderbirds, Russ Farwell, who's a former NHL GM with Philadelphia, mm-hmm. To go and try and convince him to come down and play in Seattle. And he did get the job done. And ever since, I think that's the best move that Matthew could have made, because he made that team better. He made the other players around him better. And you're right, I did say this a couple of years ago. Whoever takes Matthew Barzal, they should get a pat in the back, because he's going to make other players better. And, it's coming home to roost right now, and it's good to see him in the blue, orange, and white of the Islanders.
And actually, what's worked out, too, is that he somehow got his line mate to come to Long Island for a tryout in July. Turned out he signed a contract with Bridgeport, our AHL affiliate, and now just signed a contract with the Islanders, and that's Scott Ienzer as well.
Yeah, Scotty Ienzer is still developing, but he's not as skilled as Matthew, but I can tell you Scott can definitely be a solid third liner in the NHL. He's still developing, but he plays a great two-way game. Good guy on face-offs, plays hard, plays physical, is not afraid to go into traffic, likes to go to the front of the net looking for the rebounds, got a pretty good shot too. So I mean, he's going to develop, and if he still plays, a strong game, I think the player development and the coaching staff in Bridgeport are bringing him along slowly. But he's having a pretty good year down there. I took a look at some of their stats a few days ago. I always peruse the AHL teams and see how they're doing, and he's doing quite well. You're right.
So looking at the draft right now, obviously, just your overall look at it, as we're talking about another 2.5 months or 3 months before the actual draft happens in Dallas this year, it seems to me that a little more this year than in past, couple of the top couple of picks looks like they're coming from Europe as opposed to Canada and the U.S.
Yeah, this is a very defense-oriented draft. Many of the picks are going to be defensemen. Not that that's a bad thing, but more to your point about Europeans, yes, the number one guy is Rasmus Dahlin. Many of your followers or listeners would know that because if they watch the World Juniors in Buffalo, they watch the Olympics, they know that this kid is just outstanding. He is a generational talent. I hate to be cliche because I know other analysts use that, but I mean, I have to call a spade, and that's what he is. He has all the tools. He's got size, strength, speed, skill, agility, hockey sense to go along with leadership qualities in the future. And, you just can't take those intangibles away from him. I mean, he can play in any situation, guys. I mean, a coach, any situation that a coach wants to put him in, whether it be power play, penalty kills, and is capable of logging anywhere between 22 to 30 minutes per game. Not going to say he's going to do that right away in the NHL because it depends on the team that selects him, but I will say this, and I'll say it right now, he will play in the NHL next year. He's that good. And whether he plays 22 to 30 minutes, that depends on the coach, and that depends on whether or not the coach has, that much trust in him right away. But, I mean, I'm sure a team's going to bring him along slowly, probably pair him up with a veteran defenseman out there. But, I mean, he can play both strong at one end of the ice and strong at the other end of the ice defensively. He's just that good. He reminds a lot of people to say, is he a Carlson type player, Erik Karlsson, or, is he a Nick Lidstrom? I'd say he's a little bit of both.
Yeah, and actually, just for us Islander people, he plays on the Frölunda Indians in the Swedish League, and one of his fellow defensive partners is a guy by the name of Matt Donovan, who was an Islander guy from Oklahoma. So just bringing into play. But so from what I'm seeing right now, it looks like Dahlin is the overall number one, and I see another kid that's a Slovakian or a Czech kid that's playing in Halifax right now. Zadina, I believe, is his name. From one of my
I'm not particularly going to be quoting anybody's particular list. I've written down my maybe top 10 to 13 tonight, but I am going to talk about Zadina. But I'm going to also talk about another player. Everybody's got him at number 2. I got him at number 3. But I'm going to talk to you about Andrei Svechnikov, who's a Russian who's playing in the Ontario Hockey League for the Barrie Colts, and he's a big, strong right winger. And he's put up incredible numbers. He's only played 44 games this year, guys, in the Ontario League. He's missed probably about 26 games there. 40 goals, 32 assists, 72 points.
Wow.
Holy crap.
He is just a bull. And he's tough. He's very tough to knock off the puck, but he's more of a playmaker. But you wouldn't know that. But with the goal scorers, the goals that he's put up. But he likes to dish off a player. A lot of Europeans love to be playmakers. They don't like to shoot. But I mean, when he has the opportunity, he has a cannon of a shot. I mean, he's talented. He's just a big power forward. He's highly skilled and is capable of putting up big numbers in the pros. I mean, he reminds a lot of people. I remember you guys remember Slava Fedorov, right?
Of course.
A lot of scouts I talk to say that they remind him of Fedorov, and maybe could even be better than Fedorov. But I mean, he plays a tough physical battle in front of the net too. He's not afraid to go to those areas, and that's what a lot of teams are looking for If you don't have that high-end center, you want somebody that's going to go to the front of the net. You want somebody that's going to get the puck to your center. So if he was an Islander draftee, he would look good playing with John Tavares or Matty Barzal or even Anders Lee or any of the – Josh Bailey has really come out this year and played really well too. So he would be – any kind of attribute he would be to any of those players.
Sorry, I'm just doing a little dance here when you mentioned Bailey's name, because the other two guys here sometimes we have a little bit of conversations about. But just looking at obviously, you know, like I said, it seems to be a heavy European pick, but actually looking at my list, one of the names that kind of came in, and one of the defensemen that came up on my list as I was looking around, and he plays obviously somewhere near you, is Ty Smith from Spokane in the Western League. And again, looking right now where the Islanders sit, we have two first round picks. I think if it ended today, I think we'd be an 8-12. So looking around there, I saw Evan Bouchard's name, I saw Ty Smith's name. Figuring, you know, with your Western influence, I'm sure you've seen enough of this young man.
Yeah, Ty Smith is actually going to probably be the number one guy coming out of the WHL as far as draftees this year, whether forward or defense. I mean, he's another guy. He's not as big as some of the other defensemen that are in this draft.
Yeah, I see that. 5'10", 170. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, he moves the puck really well, and he's very smart with it. He'll sit back and he'll judge what play to make. And it doesn't matter if he's being pressured. He's very very poised with the puck and doesn't give it away foolishly. Like, he will look at a situation, see that a player may be attacking him from one angle, and be able to look at the board, say, yeah, that's the proper play, off the boards, out of the zone. Or he'll flip it up high so nobody can knock it down, and it goes out. He's just he looks at the situation, assesses it, reacts like a pro does. I mean, in one game this year, he had 2 goals and 5 assists.
Wow.
You know, and he is really, guys, he's really turned it on the second half. They're currently in a playoff right now with the Portland Winterhawks here in the WHL playoffs that started a few nights ago.
Right.
And he's a guy that's very tough to play against, too. At 5'10", you wouldn't think so, but I'll tell you, he's very, very quick and agile, and he has great positional skill where he can get into a position and tie up a player and not take a penalty, where other players will be using their stick, and then their stick work would get them in trouble, whether they cross-check, trip, or hook somebody. He's just in that position. He knows where to be, and the coach has full confidence in him, and he's able to log a lot of minutes for Spokane.
Well, actually, just keeping in mind of the WHL playoffs, obviously, you know, as far as on an Islander take, last year we, 2 years ago, Kiefer Bellows was our pick. He played 1 year in Boston College, and then the conversation with his dad, he decided to leave the Boston College, or Boston University, sorry, and come out to the Portland Winterhawks in the WHL. And from what we've seen, you know, we get obviously weekly reports on the Islander website, but from what I've been hearing from other people, we hear he's had a very good season in the W for him. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how Kiefer's adjusted to the junior game?
Well, you know, that's a lot of this has happened because of Mike Johnson's influence, the head coach of the Portland Winterhawks, and him being able to talk to Kiefer and his dad, Brian, and probably the Islanders organization. I would imagine they had also some say in what was going on there. But, yeah, I was a little surprised he left university hockey, but your question was, how has he adjusted? I think he's adjusted really well. He has got great speed, is good through traffic, low center gravity, has great push-off stride with his skating ability, and he's got a great shot. He's going to put up big numbers. He's opens up the ice for other players. And a lot of the times when I'm talking about players, I look not only at what they can do scoring-wise skill, but I look at what they can do and make other players better. And Kiefer Bellows is able to make other players better around him.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've heard.
That's why Portland is having such a great year, because they're being led by Kiefer Bellows, who is just having an outstanding year.
Now, was Johnson also the same coach that worked with Nino Niederreiter in that, too, in the past? Has he been there?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It was before he went to be the head coach of the Penguins for that stint. He was in Portland. And then, ironically, taking over for Mike at that point was Travis Green, who's now the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks.
Right. Yeah, he's got a nice little ascent, too. I mean, for the AHL and working his way up. Obviously, you being in Vancouver, you can just give us a little insight there. It must be tough being an NHL fan up there right now. But maybe maybe finally, after all these years, Vancouver might, in a couple of years, have a natural rivalry going on.
Yeah, Seattle looks like they're poised to come into the league. I mean, Gary Bettman has said that the ownership group is solid there. They have agreed in local politics in the Seattle area to build the arena that is necessary to house the team. And I believe, don't quote me on this, but I think I did read that they've already sold maybe 13 or 14,000 season tickets already.
Jeez.
Wow. Keith, wouldn't it be nice if we got 13,000 at a game?
Yeah.
I'm talking for us.
I
did see, like, a prototype of what the sweaters are going to look like.
They don't know what the team name's going to be yet. But, yeah. But
they had a couple different options online.
This doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, no, I know that, but they were putting different options online, and I looked at it, you know, like, that green color.
Mm-hmm.
It looked pretty good.
No, I mean, obviously, you know, this is a partial result of, obviously, I know Seattle has had a successful WHL franchise. I don't know. Have they won any Western titles? I don't remember.
Yes, they won the Western Hockey League. They won the championship last year.
Oh, that's right. Because Barzal went to the Memorial Cup one year. Right. But, I mean, but they do have a successful franchise. I mean, they do get good turnout. They got a good response from the community. It's great to see that they're embracing it. And like you said, you know, Vancouver has needed a natural rivalry for a long time. I mean, I know, you know, for a Canuck fan, their closest trip is, what, 8 hours to Calgary, correct?
Yeah, you're right. This would be sort of, like I said, a cascade rivalry in the area here of the Pacific Northwest. It's ironic, yeah, because the reason that the Seattle, that the franchise with led by Russ Farwell, who's not the owner, he just recently sold it this past offseason, but he's still involved with the team as team president. But the reason they moved out of the Key Arena, and they actually play out of Kent, Washington, it's just south of Seattle.
Right, yes.
And I've been to their arena several times because I go up and down the highway all the time here scouting games. And it's a very nice arena. It's got a solid fan base. It's funny because I also go to Everett, who's just north of Seattle, and the fans of North Seattle actually are more fans of Everett than they are the Seattle T-Birds. And if you go to the middle of Seattle or south towards the south, they're more inclined to be a fan base of the T-Birds. So it's really funny. There is a solid hockey franchise out there that did purchase in advance for a team that probably is going to be named an expansion team. I was told anywhere it's something between 10,000 and 14,000. No kidding. And there is a solid base out there. And as far as going, like you said, about the rivalry of Vancouver, I say bring it on. This is going to be great. Great for the area.
Yeah, they really deserve it. I mean, it's great. I so much enjoyed going up to that area to see hockey, and it'll be a great thing for them. So in the last couple of minutes we got with you, Randy, just give us a couple of names in the back of your mind that say, you know what, you know, they've gone up dramatically, you know, and, you know, from the beginning of the season to now, and somebody that might be a surprise.
Under the radar,
especially looking at us, that we've got, like I said, you know, as Islander fans, we've got two first-round draft picks. We're probably looking in the 8 to 12 range. Somebody that might, you know, I've done my homework, so I'm looking, comparing to what you have and what I've got here. But who might be the biggest surprise, in your opinion? I know it's early, but
there's two risers, but one is not a surprise now, but one has really risen up and will be probably in the top 10, and that would be defenseman Evan Bouchard of the London Knights. And he's put up some great numbers, especially in the second half. 67 games this year, 25 goals, 62 assists from the back end, 87 points.
Those are war-like numbers.
Yeah.
Well, they are. I mean, this kid, he's big and strong. I mean, he's just rocketed up the draft rankings in the past few months. Like I said, he adapts well to pressure. He plays with, like I said, with poise and prestige. He has a cannon of a shot from the back end, but needs to harness it a little bit better. But that can be done at the, you know, at player development, whether it's at, you know, at the AHL or back in junior. I mean, he reads plays, developing well, reacts like a pro, much like Ty Smith does, and has a great position defensively, like I said, Ty Smith does as well, and battles hard and is tough to play against. And you know, the intangible is the other thing I was saying, too, that I should say, is he's got great gap space control. And for listeners who are wondering, what is he talking about with gap space? What I'm talking about is he reads opposing forwards bearing down on him. If he's in transition, he's able to get in position and not be beat wide, either to the inside or the outside. And
Kind of like what's happening to Nick Leddy.
Yeah,
we're joking here.
Or you can equate this to watching defensive backs.
Yeah,
and trying to close their gap space on a wide receiver, try to take the ball away from them.
That's right. Oh, good. Okay, it's funny because that was one of the ones I checked off because it says on my thing. He said that he averages like 4.5 shots a game
for
a defenseman. Okay. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah,
someone that wants the puck.
He does, but I mean, you look at those stats. The second half, he's just taking the London Knights, and he's playing on a team that is not very good. London is not having a great year, and look what he's done for that team. So he's got loads and loads of potential. Someone else that has moved up, but is also another defenseman, is Noah Dobson.
Okay.
Noah Dobson is a potential top pairing defenseman. I mean, he's got the size at 6'3", but he needs to fill out a little bit more with his frame. You know, he's about 180 pounds. I'd like to see maybe another 10, 15 pounds added. He does the little things right in his own end. He makes the right choice of pass, outlet pass out of his own zone, and just makes little plays. Is able to keep people away from the front of the net. He just plays mean and nasty, block shots. Wants to have the puck on his stick and plays both ends of the ice like a pro as well. And he doesn't throw the puck away aimlessly either. He likes to make that play and make it sound positionally,
mm-hmm.
and not to be out of position. And that's another intangible that other NHL scouts just love to see in a young player.
Is it just the fact that these kids are 17, 18 that you don't see like a lot of guys with the, you know, that they're tall but still not building into their frame yet? So obviously this is the time in their career where they're going to start to bulk it up a little bit or need to get that extra 10 or 15 pounds, because it's rarer in the draft that you see, you know, somebody coming in at like a 205, 210, unless he's like one of those generational type.
Yeah, I would equate the two guys in the NHL currently that had that sort of thing with them. I would say Jacob Trouba was so big, but and was still trying the weight and the frame was just still trying to catch up with the rest of his body.
Mm-hmm.
I would also say, that he is, once that has happened and you see the stats he's put up with Winnipeg, he's just been outstanding. He's their best back-end player, I think.
And came out basically out of nowhere. Nobody expected that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's just he's got a cannon of a shot. He plays physical. Opposing players do not like going into the offensive zone when they know he's back there.
Right. Well, listen, Randy, we really appreciate you you coming on tonight, giving us some nice insight. And like I said, you know, when you're on the air in September in Vancouver, let me know, okay?
I will, and I'd like to have one of you guys on my show, Talk Islanders.
That
What's
sounds,
going on with the Islanders?
You got a plan. You got a plan. We'll be on. Again, thanks again, Randy, and best of luck.
Yeah, you're welcome, easy, sir.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, so Randy.
Good stuff.
Right, good stuff. Again, you know, it's interesting. Every 4 or 5 years, you get one of those drafts that, you know, I think it was about 4 years ago. It was like defenseman.
Right.
And it seems like a cyclical thing. You know, obviously, a couple other names that came up when I was doing my research is there's going to be another Tkachuk in the draft.
Oh, yeah.
He's got another one. I think in my chart here, if I'm looking correctly, he's ranked fourth. Brady Tkachuk, 6'3", 196.
Yeah, wow.
Genetics.
Yeah.
Genetics is going to help. He's a freshman at BU. So when Kiefer left, Brady showed up, and they're calling him a junkyard dog, just like Dad. you know, just to see if he has the same hands as Dad. I mean, if he does, then, you know, sky's the limit for these kids.
Matthew's
doing, yeah, and he's a real pest, too. He's just like Papa.
I like Matthew Kachuk.
So we're gonna go.
He is a very good player.
Yeah, so we're going to pay some bills, and we're going to change gears. We're going to call in our buddy, Dr. Stephen Brook, our sponsor from Country Foot Care in Mineola, who's going to be talking about his Mets. He is a huge Met fan, big into him, and we're going to talk about the upcoming season for the Metropolitan Blue and Orange. Gary, John, and John here with you on Sports Talk 1240. One more segment, and we'll be right back.
Listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
And we're back for the final hour of Sports Talk 1240. Gary, John, and John Sweeney is coming back from a pit stop and should be back in a second. We've got our guest on the line. Many of you know that as long as John Panarese and I have been on the show, our portion of Sports Talk 1240 has been sponsored by our friends at Country Foot Care. And the head honcho, the top man at Country Foot Care is Dr. Stephen Brook. He's been my podiatrist for over 20 years and a good friend of mine, and he's joining us to talk METS, 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 Mets. Hello, Dr. Brook. How are you?
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for coming on. So, I know one of the happiest news probably you got in the last couple of days is the fact that Hansel Robles got sent back to AAA.
I certainly was very pleased with that piece of news.
let's just start by looking at some of the little things going on. Obviously, the pitching staff has been actually a lot better than I thought. You know, not looking at the numbers and looking at the statistics, but the guys look healthy, have come on strong. Your thoughts about that so far?
Well, the most important part of a winning season for the Mets this year is carried with their starting pitching. We all hoped that Noah Syndergaard would have a total recovery because he and DeGrom put together, I think, one of the best 1-2 punches in all of baseball. But the biggest surprise that I've seen is how effective Matt Harvey has been. Matt Harvey last year, coming off surgery, certainly had lost some of the sharpness both in his location and in his velocity. And I think that he has a real chance for a bounce-back year this year, Gary. the rest of the staff, I was hoping that we would see Vargas and 14 wins, but looks like we're going to have to wait a little bit for that. However, I don't think we really lose that much with Vargas Lugo taking Vargas's place.
Well, it's only going to be a week, though, right?
Yeah,
he's only going to miss one start, so it shouldn't be that much of a problem.
And Vargas had a phenomenal year last year. He
led the American League in wins.
Yeah, he really did have a good win, good season last year.
Well, and you know what they really need out of their starting staff more than anything is innings, and there's no better way to burn out a bullpen than having a 5-inning starter. And last year, they had plenty of that. And by the way, with all those homegrown talent, there were so many people who pitched for the Mets as starting pitchers last year that I had never even heard of, and I followed the whole farm system. I'm hoping that won't happen this year.
Well, I think the main thing is, like you said, as long as they stay healthy, I think we have the best staff in baseball. If you really look at it, Matt's another one. Guy's key. He can't stay healthy, that guy. He's another guy that cannot stay healthy. But with Syndergaard and DeGrom, you have that 1-2 punch, and if Harvey compliments them at the third in line.
But the thing on my and you know, Dr. Brook and I have talked about this, you know, at infinitum is you got to get these guys, you got to get at least six. You can't even think five anymore. You got to get to seven.
Yeah, I mean that's my concern.
You know,
bringing that up. Yeah, right. Gotcha. But the offense is back. At least Bruce came back. We're good, right?
Cespedes. I think that Bruce is going to play at least a substantial part of the season at first base. I'm really okay with that because with Michael Conforto way ahead of schedule, I'm okay with having Legarris in center field, Shag and Flies, and not having the offensive pressure that he would have had if Conforto was going to be out much longer. And defense, especially up the middle, is really key to this team. The one unaddressed area, which I don't know, you know, is it better to have two mediocre catchers than just have one? I guess so, but I'm waiting to see whether or not this is finally the year that Denard steps up at least at the plate. I mean, if we're not going to get anywhere between 260 and 270 with 20 home runs, then really, what's the point of a guy who really does not throw all that well?
No, and actually, to me, from watching a few games during the preseason, Plawecki has done quite well. And in some cases, they were saying he stepped up even higher than Darnot has. You know, maybe this is finally the chance he's going to, you know, the chance to take, you know, if he can get it.
No, they really shied away from what I thought was a very thin catching crew in the free agency. And
right.
If they're committed and Plawecki gives them stronger defense up the middle with Cespedes, who I think looks great at the plate,
mm-hmm.
You know, let's not underplay the stability that our new third baseman brings to us. You know, I consider for the entire history of the Mets, third base, generally speaking, as a black hole because I think they've had 300 or 400 people playing there, at least it seems like.
Didn't you try out too?
You know something? I just couldn't hit a curve. But I think that was a key area. I mean, we know and wish David Wright all the best, but the possibilities of him returning in any form that is a significant contributor really can't be counted on.
No.
And so whether or not they bide their time and go for the third baseman on Baltimore at the end of the year, I'm really not sure. But you know, at least they've got somebody out there who can field a ground ball, turn a double play, and hit an occasional home run. I'll take that. I wish I had that at first base, but I still can't figure out exactly what they're going to do there. I mean, to expect Adrian Gonzalez to return to form is, you know, sort of a wishful thinking. And Dom Smith, where are you, Dom Snyder?
Yeah, I mean, for a man that had the opportunity laid out and basically set in front of him and said, go do it.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree with that.
It's a complete, total enigma, but I'm happy.
It's sort of mind-boggling that with all the diversity that they do have, especially, I mean, the only thing that really hurt Gary in all the postseason to spring training is seeing Neil Walker as a Yankee. I mean, I just got to tell you, that's just killing me. And having somebody with Walker even for a year who could handle first base, I think, would have been a better choice than Adrian Gonzalez. But, you know, that's 20/20 hindsight.
Right, really. But then again, you're talking about possibly having Bruce as a backup there too, or, you know, can fill in and, you know, help out here or there. I mean, obviously, you know, we're going back to the outfield. You know, I think Nimmo's had a very good spring training. You know, he's played with a lot more gusto than I've seen. And, you know, again, it's interesting looking at how the team played last year that you're looking at all the decisions that have to be made now. It's actually nice, you know, it was much more than expected, you know, considering the way things went.
Nimmo's as close as they come, Gary, to an actual leadoff hitter.
Exactly.
You know, he's got some pop, but he hustles, he's fast. I still think that it would be, you know, pretty much of a stretch to expect this team to steal 80 bases for the year, and that's just one steal every two games. But unless somehow they find a way to get Reyes in there on a more consistent basis, and I think that blocks our shortstop. And I'd rather see Cabrera at second base than Reyes just spelling second, short, and third, which is their plan. But in reality, he's really the only base stealing threat that they have. And, you know, when you've got as much power as they do, sure, getting guys on, you know, it's like the old Weaver, let's hit a three-run home run time. But I think it's more exciting to play a running game. And I'm wondering if Mickey is going to play a little bit more hit and run and take a little bit more base running chances than Terry did last year.
Yeah, because, I mean, you do have a little bit of speed. I think Rosario has shown he's got a little bit of wheels, too. I mean,
not much, though. Not much.
No, I'm not talking Reyes speed, but I'm talking he's above average. You know, but that's...
Well, I mean, first and third, there's no speed. And Rosario, sure. I mean, there's no base stealing threat that's going to put that type of pressure on the pitching staff. So now you're going to just have to deal with boppers instead of runners. But I guess I'm okay with that. So long as the defense holds and the starting pitching stays healthy, I think we'll be okay.
And I think more Gonzalez is going to, instead of hitting the long ball more like he did a couple of years back, he's more of a singles guy. But like you said, he's going to be very fragile because I don't think he's played a full season in.
It's a couple of years.
Yeah.
It's a couple of years. But you know what? Hey, when you think about it, you know, as much as we rip on the Wilpons and what they move and Sandy Alderson and what he's done, you know, you got Reyes 2 years ago at the major league minimum, and he's, you know, you're only giving him a little bit now, and he's at least giving you something. Gonzalez, you're not paying his contract. Atlanta's paying $21 million of the $21.8 million.
So, well, how sweet is that?
Yeah, exactly. So you're basically getting it for peanuts. So if he, so whatever he gives you is gravy.
I agree, and I also think that a very critical part of their entire season is going to depend on the bounce back of our closer. Because if he doesn't bounce back, and it looks like he has, I don't really see an alternative like Reed gave them last year. I mean, Addison Reed, out of the blue, I mean, you had an absolute bona fide real major league closer. Who would be that person if not our number one bat? I don't know. I mean, what do you think, Gary?
They might have to go out and get somebody because they really don't have anybody. They really don't have anybody like they had with Reed.
Well, I mean, you do have Ramos. I mean, Ramos was a reliever for for the Marlins. I mean, he does have some experience. You know, it could carry you through a little
but
bit.
Isn't it more important to get through 7-8? And if you've got Ramos and Blevins and our new guy, who I think is pretty damn amazing, actually. But they're strong enough. If they can get through 7-8 just to get to the closer, so long as Familia stays healthy, and, you know, I think he'll be okay. And I'm was reading that he's been going more and more back to his slider, which I think is very interesting because his sinker is such a setup pitch for a slider.
Right.
Because he throws them virtually identically. I mean, when I watch him pitch, I can't tell.
Oh, the arm, yeah, especially from your seats. It's impossible to tell what he's got, what he's giving you. So you could see 99 come.
He's not wild. I mean, you know,
no.
Every once in a while when he loses the plate, you know, it's duck.
Yeah.
but hopefully that won't happen too often. And he's a guy who will give you a lot of ground balls. So even if he puts on, you know, he lives with a runner at first base. It's truly amazing for a closer how many guys actually get on first. And seeing how he struggles to keep runners closer, let's see if they have worked on that a little bit in spring training, but, you know, seeing is believing. The only one that I think has more struggle with that is Syndergaard. Oh, my gosh. You know, thank God he only has five guys on a game. But, you know, every walk and a single is a double and puts a lot of pressure on your defense when a ground ball can't get two.
Let me ask you this. We've been talking about all the positive and the good things. Do you have any specific concern about what are they lacking?
Well, number one is speed, and you know, this is in many regards a very streaky hitting team. You know, when they're hot, they're going to score tons of runs, but I've seen too many times where, you know, when your power hitters are out of sync, they struggle to score. And, you know, a little bit of speed might help. So I think that that's one area that I really don't think they have the personnel to deal with that right now. So I think speed, it's possible that, you know, defense, we'll see. It depends which outfielders are playing. And, you know, Michael Conforto coming back, is he really going to be able to hold his own in center field, or is he going to struggle? I can't tell. You know, he's not a natural center fielder. I liked him a lot more when he played left field, but, you know, certainly I hate the idea of Cespedes being in center field because, God, you know, with those legs, the less he runs, the better.
Yeah, that's nightmares waiting to happen, unfortunately.
Well, again, they're number one concern, I think, is their health. If they stay healthy, and I don't think anyone could predict that, but if they stay healthy, it's the difference between 2015 and 2017.
Yeah.
I mean, without those guys healthy, it's really tough to watch a team where you're bringing up people from a minor league system, which I think is very, very thin. So, you know, although they might have an ace starter down there, if Mueller, you know, gets himself squared away. But, you know, I certainly agree with him going down. And Robles, you know, if you wanted to make my day, maybe we can see Robles in a Yankee uniform. That would be fun.
Well, listen, I know you're getting ready for a little vacation. You got to get to work, but tomorrow. So we appreciate you coming on for a couple minutes and talking Mets. And you know, I thank you from the bottom of my heart for sponsoring our Sports Talk 1240 over the past 5 years. It's really been a honor to represent Country Foot Care.
Thank you very much, Gary. Thanks, guys. And
well, thank you.
All right. Yeah. Listen. Have a great trip, and I'll make sure your seats are nice and secure on Saturday.
Let's go, Mets.
Have fun, Gary.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Brook. Take care. Okay.
Getting back to the Mets just real quick while we're here. When Wheeler does come up, mm-hmm. he could put him in the pen.
That's what I think. He's your long guy right now. You know, because like I said, you're only losing Vargas for one start.
Right.
I mean, he, and again.
Well,
you know,
he broke his hand like in March, right?
That's non-pitching.
Yeah.
No, it was only 2 weeks ago. So, okay. Yeah. So he's only going to be out a week. From what Dr. Brooke was saying, I didn't, you know, we should have mentioned a little more. They said Swarzak, who was originally a Met prospect years and years and years ago, came from Milwaukee. They said he's been great in the bullpen.
Yeah, I think the pen's good. I don't know. I think the Mets are going to be, I think they changed a little bit. They're going to be, I mean.
Well, look at the division. I mean, obviously, you know, Washington's got a year older. They lost.
Yeah.
They got a new manager. There's a little bit of, say disillusionment in the clubhouse, but it doesn't seem to be as comfortable as past Washington teams. I think they've gone past their opportunity to win it. And with Bryce Harper probably wanting $40 million a year next year in free agency, you know, that's going to be a tough situation there. So Washington's going to be interesting. Philadelphia, I think they're moving up. But getting Arrieta was a nice pickup.
That was good, yes. Yeah,
and they've got a couple of young good kids on the move. I think they're an up-and-comer. Excuse me. Looking at the rest of the National League, you know, just comparing, I don't know. I don't see, you know, maybe the Cubs got a little better and fixed from their hiccup from last year. I mean, the Dodgers are the Dodgers. They're always going to have $250 million in their payroll and all these big names and whatever, but I mean, who do you guys really see out of the National League?
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, the Cardinals are not the same. You know, they're not going to be the same kind of team.
No, the Cubs, the Cubbies, and really Washington. I mean, that's it. I agree with you 100%.
You know, Atlanta's going to be an improved team. I think they'll be better in a year or two. You know, they've got a bunch of young talent, but. And then
Miami just basically gave everybody away. He's starting over again. He's starting from scratch. So
yeah, he certainly is.
Even though they finished ahead of us last year.
So the big question is, does the Yankees hit 300 home runs this year? But see the news about Bird with his foot. They think he's got problems again.
Yeah, he's been out for a while. Before that, last year he came back at the end of the year, but
he came back great. But he's got they're concerned about his feet.
The Yankees hit 300 home. Well, you're going to get at least 105 or 10 out of those two guys.
Between Judge and Stanton.
Yeah.
And again, you look at Gary Sanchez. He's the one that you keep forgetting about, but they think he's the best true long ball hitter on the team.
That's shocking. That's scary.
That's scary when you're third best hitter, they don't even think about it.
I mean, they'll come close to that number. I don't know. That's going to be tough. Don't you think so?
Yeah. And like I said, you know.
I think health is going to be also, you know, it's 162 games. It's a long season.
Haven't we been saying that for so many years?
Yep.
No, but that's true. I mean, we predicted our hockey, we predicted our baseball, you know, at game zero, you know, before the season even started. You know, if you wish you can go with that crystal ball and go, you know, 2 months in and see who got hurt on game three on a bad slide or, you know, who banged into the wall and got a concussion and is out for the rest of the year.
Well, Stanton won the MVP. Did you look at his stats last year? He had this monster year last year.
Yeah, he did.
And he's...
There wasn't a bad part of his game.
And he was the whole team, really, carrying the whole team.
Yeah.
They were down to nothing. I mean, really, he doesn't really have to be the main guy now with this team.
Well, that's what I was impressed when spring training broke out and Stanton wanted to get involved and, you know, and stick his head in. And Boone, Aaron Boone told him, look, he goes, dude, you don't have to be the man. He says, there's everybody else here. He said, just make yourself one of the team, you know, and that's all he needs to do, you know. And in a situation like this, it's perfect for somebody coming in with all the attention and all the expectations coming into head, you know. I think the American League East is probably the strongest division.
I agree. With you.
Boston, they're going to change. You know that Machado is going to have one sick year because he's playing for.
Contract.
$300 million contract.
They just picked up
Cobb from the Rays, so they got another good starting pitcher. I've been a Baltimore fan as long as I've been a Met fan, so I always watch the Orioles, and I don't count them out.
So what's going on with Cobb? Are they sending him down to the minors to get back into the swing of things again?
No, he'll go up. he'll go up. I don't think he'll he won't be the number one starter right away. But
that's a bit a little big difference. Machado's fantastic third baseman, but hitting in Baltimore and hitting it at Citi Field's a big difference though, with hitting home runs.
Yeah, but he gets sprayed right. He sprays all three. He's not a full-fledged pull hitter. I think he's like a David Wright. He can go to right center. He can go to right. So it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But left field in Baltimore is just as bad as left field at Citi Field too. It's right field in Baltimore that's the launching pad.
Yeah.
So I don't think it'd be much of a difference. But you know, I wasn't too thrilled necessarily with the Frazier deal when it happened. But from what you hear from the reporters and stuff like that, he's fit in the clubhouse perfectly. You know, he's a rah-rah guy. You know, everything that he was with the Yankees, with the thumb down and all that stuff, he's doing with the Mets. And I think it's a nice thing to have it. You know, you have at least some stability at that hot corner.
Right. I think that was a great move by getting him. To tell you the truth, I really do. I know what you're saying about his attitude. I think it was a phenomenal move.
You know, with that clubhouse and the way it was last year, they need somebody like a Todd Frazier.
Yeah.
You know, they needed to get back Jay Bruce. Jay Bruce was a quiet guy.
It was huge.
But everybody loved Jay Bruce.
Yeah.
Everybody loved him.
He loved it here too. He even said it. He said he didn't want to.
He was unsure at first.
Yeah.
But once he understood and got to it, hey. The fact that he went to a team like Cleveland who had a shot for a World Series and went for it and then decided to come back, that tells you something.
Right.
Well, you know, that tells you maybe, you know what, it does tell you a lot because Cleveland still does have a shot. They have great pitcher staff. They still have a shot of going back again.
Sure
and he
do.
Decided to come to play with the Mets. That's something. Tells you something. Mm-hmm. Tells you a lot.
Yep, exactly. Well, of course, I mean, Callaway was a pitching coach, but he dealt with him, and I guess he felt comfortable and knew what Callaway would bring to the team, you know. You know, Terry Collins was a nice guy, but, you know, sometimes, you know, you can't be just too nice, you know.
Collins had a good run. He didn't get a lot of respect.
And again, I think Callaway is the type of guy that got instant respect from his players.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And I think that, again, the biggest key was getting Dave Island here and what he did with Kansas City and what he turned that franchise around. And he could do the same thing here with guys that are already established.
Yeah, I think our pitcher staff's going to be fine.
Come on. Noah's throwing 101 already. I mean, come on. 101.
Does he have to hit 101 right now? He could be hitting 101. Let's slow it down a little bit.
But
Vargas, I mean, I think we're stacked I think we have the best staff in baseball.
Yeah, I think there's
if they're healthy.
If everything stays the way it should be, they're solid 1-5/6.
Right.
You know, I mean, to me, the biggest question mark is Matt's. Being a fellow lefty and a Long Islander, I gotta root for him. But you know, you gotta have that scare that he doesn't come limp. And so far, I like how they progressed him slower than the other guys. Everybody else, I think, is ready to go full blow. Maybe he needs a start or two extra to get going, but they're taking him slow, and I think that's key. So that hopefully come June and July, he can pull you that 120 pitch, 8-inning outing that they need. You know,
well, like you said, years ago, those guys didn't 41 starts.
Yeah, but
how many is Matt's going to get this year?
That's the fine line, you know, because you think about it, in all levels of baseball, from kids up, they're cutting pitch counts. They're limiting things. I mean,
yeah, even my nephew's 10 years old. They have pitch counts on them.
Yeah, I will say,
and they're not developing their own.
My one moment of glory playing baseball as a kid. Okay, in Levittown, I threw a no hitter when I was 11 years old.
Wow,
6-inning no hitter, struck out 17. Okay, wow. 6 innings, I threw 101 pitches.
Wow,
you know, so I mean, I did walk 5. But still, I struck out 17 and had a no-hitter. But
that's
still
phenomenal.
Yeah, but I mean, no big deal. But what I'm saying is, you know, if it was Little League, I'd be out in the third inning.
Right.
You wouldn't have the opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, and you know what? If you're smart and if you're taught the right way, you could definitely beat this stuff. I mean, you know, I think sometimes coaches get a little too concerned with numbers and concerned with figures. And yes, obviously arms are being messed up, and you got to take care of it. But if they're done right, I think if they're taught right, it'd be a much different situation.
Well, so like I said, it's very funny because they were putting all these innings in and all these they were throwing every other day, throwing a couple days a week,
mm-hmm.
and now they're so worried about every little thing with these guys.
Yep. Anyway, so we made it through 2 hours.
Made it through. So, all right. So the Mets, what do you pick? 90? What'd you say? You said a little under 90.
I say 88.
See 88. All right. 90. So last year the Mets
71
had 70 wins and 70 wins. 92 losses. I say it's the reversal.
92 and 70?
Yeah.
Okay. I would love it.
I'm going the reversal.
All right, so 92, 90, and 88. So hopefully I'm wrong.
And we all make the playoffs and we go deep into the
playoffs
and maybe
let's
win
just
the World
hope
Series.
Our baseball season is better than our hockey season. That's all we got to say. We'll leave it at that. But listen, we want to thank our guests that came on. We want to thank Andrew Gross from Newsday for stopping in. Randy Gorman from British Columbia with FC Consultants. And Dr. Stephen Brook, our sponsor from Country Foot Care in Mineola and Williston Park. And, of course, thank you to my buddies here, John Panarese and John Sweeney, as their wonderful job. John, have a great vacation. Forget about us for a little while. And we'll be back in a few weeks for another Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB. And the words of my good friend Bill Hayes, keep skating, everybody, and good night.
Program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.